second case this morning, Mush v. Domtar.
Saylor? May it please the Court. My name is Richard Saylor. I'm on behalf of the law firm of Morgan & Morgan. I represent the plaintiffs in this action. As this Court is aware, this case was initially filed under the Fair Labor Standards Act and Wisconsin state law on the basis of overtime violations for alleged nonpayment of shower time, donning and doffing of protective gear. The case was initially certified both under Rule 23 and 216B of the FLSA as both a class action and a collective action. And the reason why we're here, candidly, is that the defendant thereafter moved for summary judgment, which Judge Kraft granted. The primary issue in this case is not whether the district court made an error of law or in the application of the law, but rather whether the district court erred by ignoring and or failing to consider material record evidence warranting the denial of summary judgment on plaintiffs, predominantly their shower time claims. Specifically, the district court made a finding that there was no record evidence submitted as to actual chemicals on the laborers' bodies at the end of the day warranting the necessity to shower and to be compensated for same. Specifically, the district court made a finding that the evidence was speculative. Respectfully,
the evidence that was submitted by the party show that some of them went home with their clothes, showered at home?
There was occasions.
Well, that's a fairly easy question. Was there evidence that some of the employees went home and showered at home, wore the clothes home and showered?
On occasion, but the primary
question.
Well, and respectfully, Your Honor, the answer is on occasion, but the elaboration on the answer is that it was not a matter of convenience for the employees to either shower in the workplace or bring their clothing home.
Why? If someone went home with them, why wasn't it a matter of fuss?
Because on those particular... I'm sorry, Your Honor, were you finished?
Why wasn't it a matter of their convenience as opposed to necessity?
Well, because on those particular days, Your Honor, they may not have been exposed to the chemicals at issue necessitating a shower.
Was that in the record?
I believe so, Your Honor.
My understanding was that it wasn't.
Well, there was testimony that, for example, Mr. Mush, who's the named plaintiff, recalled one occasion or he testified 99% of the time he would shower at the workplace. There was an occasion where he would go home, for example, if he wasn't working in a pipe chase.
Mm.
But respectfully, Your Honor, the issue of whether it's a matter of convenience or not is not an issue for a district court to decide. That's an issue of fact for a jury to decide.
If there is no disputed question that leads to it, however, it is a question of fact that is easy. And if there's no dispute on a subject, there you are.
Well, but respectfully, Your Honor, there is a dispute in the sense of the plaintiffs have always...
If they go home to shower, and even occasionally, that it's not a necessary to their workplace to shower.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
You can do that.
The Fair Labor Standards Act is viewed on a week-by-week basis. We don't look at the totality of the circumstances. But the issue, the plaintiffs have always contended that the issue of whether they can go home to shower, whether that's a matter of convenience or necessity, the plaintiffs have contended that's an illusory contention by the defendant.
Would that be a subject matter for the bargaining, collective bargaining?
It's an interesting issue.
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Well, in this case, there's so much disputed evidence. The answer is yes, it could have been.
I thought that they did collectively bargain for a pay raise, giving up that.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the word bargain and collectively is where I would respectfully disagree. First of all, the only evidence that the defendant
was there at one time part of the collective bargaining that they got paid for showering and shaving or whatever else they're doing?
With a predecessor employee.
Go out for a martini or...
With the predecessor employee in 1993, there was a prior agreement.
So part of the bargaining agreement was that they showered and shaved and got paid for it.
Correct.
And that was left out of the present bargaining agreement, but they got a pay raise.
Correct. There was a 50-cent pay increase. However, Your Honor, the main point on the collective bargaining agreement, and candidly why I don't intend to spend a ton of time on it, first we contend that there's genuine issues of fact, but more importantly, even assuming that the 2030 defense, which is the collective bargaining agreement defense, did apply to the Plaintiff's Fair Labor Standards Act, it is imperative to understand that there is no such provision under Wisconsin state law. 2030, the courts have either examined it as an exemption or a definition of the Fair Labor Standards Act. But the Fair Labor Standards Act savings provision specifically says that states are free to increase or essentially create their own law that supplements the Fair Labor Standards Act. That is, the Fair Labor Standards Act is a floor, not a ceiling, and states are free to impose additional requirements or burdens on employers. So even assuming, respectfully, Your Honors, that the 2030 argument was applicable to the FLSA, the fact remains that we still wind up or should have wound up before a jury as to the Wisconsin state law claim because there is no such similar provision under Wisconsin state law. You know, what I want to go back to, with your permission, is the concept of whether there was record evidence or not regarding whether showering was necessary. And on pages 6 through 11 of our brief, since we're on limited time, we have cited specific testimony in instances where, for example, plaintiffs and defendants' representatives, or appellees' representatives here, testified that if there's lime dust on you at the end of the day, you should shower. Now, the defendant's argument, or the appellee's argument, has always been, well, we pay you for that if you bring it to our attention. But that ignores the realities and the record evidence in the case regarding they don't know most of the time that there's this caustic or lime dust on them until they disrobe in the locker room. The defendant's contention would have them walk down the hallway respectfully after disrobing, put their clothing back on, seek out a supervisor and say, I've got this patch of lime dust on my back. Can I get paid to shower for it? While in a bubble the concept sounds clever, the reality of the situation is it's not a reality. The undisputed testimony in the case is that when lime dust is on your person, you wash it off because it's not only a risk to the person but also to your family. And we've cited to MSDS fact sheets which specifically state that if you have this substance on your body, wash it off immediately. Don't bring the clothing home because you can contaminate your family. So the issue of whether it's a matter of convenience as opposed to a necessity, respectfully, an employee's safety in the workplace is not something subject to negotiation or being flippant with. If there's a safety issue and it necessitates them showering, then respectfully, they should be compensated for it.
I just understand how that would work. Does it? If you're, say you have an 8-hour shift and you get exposed to some hazardous thing, you mentioned this lime dust, would you then try to get rid of it right away or would you work the whole day with it? I don't understand that.
It's a two-part answer, Your Honor. If you're aware of it at the time, if you feel it or you see it on your skin, absolutely. There's no dispute that you go and you tell your supervisor and you wash off and you get paid for that.
Right.
What we're dealing with specifically is you can be in what they refer to as a pipe chase all day, and you're wearing your PPE, your personal protective equipment. But the undisputed testimony in the case is that even when you properly wear your PPE, the lime dust can still breach the protective equipment and get on your person or your skin or your hair, and you might not be aware of it until you disrobe in the shower room at the end of the day. It's inconceivable or it's illogical to require an employee to report that they've been exposed to a substance when they may not even be aware of it until they're post-shift, which is essentially the gravamen of the plaintiff's claims in this case is that's what's happening. The testimony in the case regarding the defendant has provided separate locker rooms. The defendant is aware of the showering. The testimony in the case, and it was somewhat comical, and it was a nice banter back and forth with counsel, who's been very gracious on the case, was an instance where I asked Mr. Mush, the named plaintiff, about his shower at home, and I asked him to describe the towels and the soft fluffiness that he used, and then he described the showers at Domtar after the defendant made an argument that it's his convenience to shower there. It's what he referred to as almost a military shower. He doesn't even use cloth to dry off. He uses brown paper towels. And then he goes home and takes another shower at the end of the day once he leaves Domtar. Respectfully, it makes no sense that he's taking a shower there for convenience when he then goes home and takes a personal shower at the end of the day.
He's just super clean.
Well, if you met Mr. Mush, and God bless him, I love him, you'd disagree, Your Honor.
I'm glad I don't hear that.
Your Honor, I would point the court specifically to the Supreme Court decision in Steiner, which is binding. It's a 1956 case which dealt with a battery plant. And candidly, I took the case based upon the Steiner decision, which essentially held that where it's illusory, where it's not a matter of convenience, and where there's a true and real risk to employees, then they should shower at the end of the workday and be compensated for same. Likewise, the Apperson decision, which is a Ninth Circuit decision, likewise found that in a petroleum plant, the issue of whether it is convenient for an employee to shower at work versus at home is an issue where there's a dispute that must not be decided on summary judgment. Ultimately, Your Honors, at the end of the day, a jury may come back and find that there were only 1 or 2 weeks where Mr. Mush and the plaintiffs were actually exposed to lime dust. We can pull those records from the defendant because we know where they worked. So the issue in this case, candidly, is not liability. It's really mostly a matter of damages. If Mr. Mush and the plaintiffs, as they have testified to, had one day where they were exposed to lime dust in the shower and they weren't compensated for that, they're entitled to a jury trial on that issue, even if it's just for that 1 week. Candidly, we submit that there's a lot more weeks than just one, but again, we go back to the concept of the Fair Labor Standards Act, which was created in 1938 to benefit the employees and to punish employers for working employees and not compensating them properly for their time. Exemptions and exclusions to the Fair Labor Standards Act must be construed narrowly. It is essential that the employee be given the benefit of the doubt and all factual inferences on summary judgment be construed in his favor or her favor. Respectfully, we believe that the district court erred by taking bits and pieces of testimony as opposed to looking at the body of testimony as a whole, including not only the defendant's own expert's report, but the factual evidence on the record.
You realize you're in your rebuttal time.
I don't really think I have much more to say, Your Honor, other than that. So for the reasons articulated both in our briefs and here today, we respectfully request that this court reverse the district court's order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seller. Ms. Linder.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Laura Linder, and I represent the appellee Domtar Industries, Inc., which owns the two paper mills at issue in Nacoosa and Port Edwards, Wisconsin. Now, the issue before the court is a singular one, and that is whether the plaintiffs have proffered enough evidence to create an issue of fact that they should be entitled to overtime compensation to remove their clothes and shower at the end of every workday. It is our view that the evidence in the record, as well as the case law, establishes that those activities are what are considered non-compensable post-liminary activities under both the federal law, the Fair Labor Standards Act, as well as Wisconsin wage and hour law. And it's really the Supreme Court's decision in Steiner versus Mitchell which sets forth the analytical framework for these types of cases.
Well, at least you're in agreement with your opponent on that issue. But go ahead.
And I would also agree that Mr. Mush didn't appear super clean to me when I met him as well. In Steiner, the Supreme Court said that in order for a company to be required to pay for post-shift showering, the employer needs to either require it, as a matter of course, employees must shower before they leave the workplace, or the employees have to establish that they cannot safely leave their workplace without showering and removing their clothes. Here, the plaintiffs cannot establish either test. First of all, it's not required by Domtar policy. That's why we're here. Domtar does not say to these maintenance employees, you must shower before you leave work. However, the policy is an important twofold policy. First prong is employees are required to wear personal protective equipment, known as PPE, to avoid getting the hazardous substances that are in the mills.
They have to bring their own PPE, or do you provide
PPE?
They
do not. The company provides it. They are to show up in jeans and T-shirts for work, wearing safety shoes and have their safety glasses on. But Domtar has the full panoply of protective equipment, from Tyvek suits to chemical suits to all sorts of boots, every kind of glove you can imagine, an entire gigantic room full of it. So if they need it for a particular job, they're supposed to get it, they're supposed to wear it. The maintenance employees who testified in this case all testified uniformly that they were trained on what PPE they needed to use for their particular jobs. The PPE was available to them whenever they needed it, and it was their consistent practice to use it. The second part of Domtar's policy, which is critical, is that notwithstanding the use of PPE, if an employee was exposed to some hazardous substance while doing their work, they were to wash it off immediately. They're not to wait until the end of the day to take a shower. They wash it off immediately. If their clothes are affected, they change their clothes.
What
there's
if
other
they
clothes
don't know
they can
that
put on.
They've been exposed?
Well, there really has not been any real evidence of an exposure that was unknown at a time and later became known.
That's Mr. Seller said, though, that there are times when this stuff can kind of seep through your protective gear and you don't know it until you take it off.
Well, and I think his point then was then it becomes known. It's the end of the day. And the policy of the company is if you discover it at the end of the day and you're required to shower in that particular instance, you're paid for it. And, in fact, I'll direct the court to page 9 of our brief in which we cite the testimony of the maintenance employees who testified in deposition testified they're aware of that policy. And if they were exposed at the end of their shift and they had to shower and it took them past their normal workday, they put it on their timesheets and they were paid overtime.
So this is just to establish an absolute rule that they have to get paid for showering every time, regardless of whether or not they...
They don't get paid to shower every day.
I know, but the suit... is predicated on that
the suit
theory.
Is predicated on the theory that they are exposed
yeah.
every day.
Yeah.
Can I take you back just a minute? Are they being paid to put on these personal protective equipment?
They are. They are to show up in their jeans, T-shirts, boots, but if then they get their job assignments, and the job assignment is, you know, you need to work at the Recost area of the Nakusa Mill, and there's lime dust. Then they go put on their Tyvek suits, put on their boots.
But they've already punched in at that stage.
They've already punched in. They're already getting paid.
The clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking, so any kind of specialized PPE they need for whatever job assignment they have, they go get. They're paid for it. Some maintenance employees will need to use that equipment. Other maintenance employees, instrument technicians, electricians, you know, they're sometimes just looking at, you know, screens. They don't need to do that. In response also to Mr. Seller's argument about this one day, if they're exposed one day, you know, as I stated, the undisputed policy is if you are exposed, you're paid for it, even if it happens at the end of the day, even if it requires overtime to shower. There is no testimony in this case that any employee was ever exposed and didn't put the time down on their timesheet. So there's no
They have to check with anybody when they put it in a timesheet, or they just put it in a timesheet and they're automatically paid?
They submit it and they're paid. If there's a question, you know, the supervisor might ask them, but if they've submitted it, they're going
to
get paid.
They don't have to go tap on somebody's shoulder and point out the fact that they're exposed, right?
No, they would just go take care of it and explain, well, I've been, you know, I was exposed, I took a shower, so I had to shower. Because usually what happens is they shower, then they've got to go back to their workplace, put away their gear and PPE, fill out their timesheet, and go home. So they're going to be paid for all that extra time. The issue that the plaintiffs are trying to raise, then, is that it's the nature of the work that somehow requires this post-shift showering. And we wholeheartedly agree with the district court's finding that that theory is entirely based on speculation. Plaintiffs offered their best evidence to this court in their brief concerning the testimony on that, and all the plaintiffs testified were that on some unspecified occasions during some unspecified period of time, there were occasions where they found something grimy or dirty on their bodies, so they needed to shower. Well, that doesn't establish the need to take a shower after every work shift, and in fact, that theory is inconsistent with the other evidence in the record, which is it's not consistent with the testimony that these employees are required to use PPE and that they, in fact, wear it in order to prevent the types of contamination that might require washing or showering. It's not consistent with the injury reports from both of the paper mills, which show very, very few injuries associated with any kind of hazardous substance exposure, very limited cases of burning, itching. And again, here, the maintenance employees all testified uniformly that they were trained on their obligations to report those types of injuries, and they did so. And so if you believe their testimony, which it is undisputed, they weren't reporting the types of injuries that would otherwise occur due to these exposures, so why would end-of-shift showering be necessary? The theory is also inconsistent with the fact that the plaintiffs and the maintenance employees testified that they often wear the same work clothes on multiple shifts without washing them. So if their clothes are so dirty that they need to change them at the end of the day and shower, why are they putting the same work clothes on another shift? It's also not consistent with the fact that these employees take their work clothes home to launder them, exposing themselves and potentially family members to whatever might be on their clothes when they throw them in their washer and dryer. And these are employees who are trained to know and identify the hazards in this workplace. These are paper mills that have been in operation for decades. These are known processes. The hazards in the workplace are identifiable. The average, we submitted in our brief that the average tenure of these maintenance employees is 30 years. So these are people who know what they're working with, they know what they're seeing on their bodies, and they know how to take care of it. But yet these are folks who will wear the same work clothes multiple times, and they will take their clothes home to launder, even though they could use a service through the company, although they would have to pay for it. So we believe on this record that no reasonable jury could find that these employees, these maintenance employees, cannot leave the two mills in question without changing their clothes and showering every day. This is a decision. The decision by maintenance employees to take off their clothes and shower before they leave work is a decision of convenience, not necessity. Many of them testified they change their clothes because they get dirty, they get sweaty, they probably get stinky. They are working among machines that have lubricants and grease and dirt, and they're in oftentimes hot, humid environments up in northern Wisconsin, so they get dirty. So naturally, they might want to shower before they get in their cars or walk into their homes or go wherever they're going to go. But that is a decision of convenience. And the courts and the Department of Labor in enforcing the Fair Labor Standards Act have said that is the type of showering, washing that occurs under normal conditions, and that activity is a non-compensable post-liminary activity. Just a couple words on lime dust, because that's the primary focus of the plaintiff's case in their briefing. It's important to know that lime dust is only present in the Nakusa mill, not the Port Edwards mill. So maintenance employees working in Port Edwards would not be potentially affected by any lime dust exposure. It is also in only concentrated amounts in the Nakusa mill in one section of the mill called the recost area, where it's because Nakusa and Port Edwards use two different paper manufacturing processes, and the process used in Nakusa in one part of that process, lime dust is generated. There is no evidence that Nakusa maintenance workers have daily assignments in the recost area. And more importantly, there's no evidence that when Nakusa maintenance workers are assigned to do maintenance jobs in the recost area that they have been actually exposed to that lime dust. Particularly because one of the requirements is when you're working in that area, you are supposed to wear PPE, which is primarily a Tyvek suit or some other garment that is going to prevent the lime dust exposure. But if it were to happen, the employee is to take care of it right away. There are safety showers, deluge showers, located throughout the mills in the event there is an immediate need to wash. So the focus on lime dust, I think, is somewhat misleading, and the evidence doesn't support, one, that it's as prevalent as the plaintiffs are leading this court to believe, and two, that the actual exposures are really all that great, particularly given the use of PPE. With respect to the 203 defense that Mr. Seller talked about, that's a defense that we raised in the alternative. Our primary argument was that plaintiffs haven't met their burden of proof that showering is even required to protect their health and safety. But assuming it was, we have raised this defense under the Fair Labor Standards Act under Section 203, arguing that because there's this past custom and practice of non-payment of shower time, that the federal law recognizes that becomes non-compensable hours worked. Plaintiffs conceded in response to our summary judgment motion at page 25 that there was no dispute that prior to 1993, employees received paid shower time, and they do not dispute that they were aware as of 1993 that practice was changed. Now there's testimony that some of these maintenance employees weren't sure how that came about, whether it was through collective bargaining agreement or what, but the facts are undisputed that the maintenance employees knew of that change in the practice and that they failed to challenge it, and by acquiescing to that change of policy, change in practice, that created a new custom and practice that Domtar continued to follow when it assumed the bargaining agreements and operation of those mills. So given that longstanding custom and practice, the company does have that defense. To also address the how that bears upon the Wisconsin claim, counsel for appellants argued that, well, even if Domtar has that defense under federal law, they would not have it under Wisconsin law. We disagree with that under the doctrine of conflict preemption. And plaintiffs referred to you earlier to what he called the savings clause under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act. It's Section 218A of the Fair Labor Standards Act says that the FLSA does not prevent states from establishing higher minimum wages, shorter work weeks, or more stringent child labor restrictions. It's not a broad provision that says, states, you can do anything you want to regulate wage and hour, but in these three specific areas, you can establish more stringent work requirements. Here, the issue is not a conflict between the FLSA and state law on wages, work weeks, or child labor restrictions. The conflict is between the Fair Labor Standards provision recognizing federal labor law and the right of parties to collective bargain and state law. So given that the Fair Labor Standards Act, federal law, recognizes the employer's right to bargain over compensation for washing, including terms that would be implied in a collective bargaining agreement through a custom and practice, as in this case, it would be a violation of the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution for that bargain not to be recognized by Wisconsin, given the fact that it is a lawful bargain under federal law. In short, Wisconsin law cannot provide more protection to employees while then stripping employers of a right recognized under federal law, that right to bargain over compensation. The federal law needs to be recognized as supreme in this instance. So for the reasons I've just stated and are set forth in our brief, we urge the court to affirm the district court's summary judgment decision in favor of Domtar Industries and the dismissal of the claims presented. Unless the court has any further questions, we stand on our briefs.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Much time.
May it please the court again, I'll be very brief. Your Honors, if this was a case about grease and grime, we wouldn't be sitting here before the court. This is a case about exposure to life-threatening calcium oxide, otherwise known as lime dust, chromium, hexavalent, ash, and soot, all of which Mr. Mush specifically testified in the record that he was being exposed to, which is why he started looking up the fact sheets to begin with. The second point I wanted to make was OSHA sets forth requirements for the employers to maintain a safe workplace. Respectfully, the appellee's argument turns the intent and position of OSHA on its head. It is not the employee's responsibility to ensure a safe working place. It is the employer. It is undisputed in this case that the employer is aware that the PPE is breached no matter how much training, no matter how many things the employees do to ensure it's on properly. It still goes through the protective garments for the defendant or the appellee to essentially wash its hands and say, well, we trained you and you put on PPE. I'm sorry.
Interesting metaphor.
I thought of it as soon as I said it, Your Honor. But for the employer to essentially turn a blind eye and say, it's not our responsibility anymore, it's now yours once you've disrobed, is contrary to the law. Finally, as to the preemption point, had the Wisconsin legislature simply wished to adopt the Fair Labor Standards Act, it would have done so. It would have adopted it in full, but it did not do so. It diverged from the Fair Labor Standards Act here, complied with it there. For these reasons and based upon the legislative history of the Wisconsin wage and hour laws, we would respectfully submit that the 2030 argument is inapplicable. Your Honor, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Sure. Again, thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.